Anybody ever wrestled with a maths problem, perhaps? I know there are a couple of engineers in the room. And okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Right. Okay. What an amazing day out that was, yeah. I mean, wrestling was much more common in, like, when I was growing up. This is crazy. I mean, this slide here, who recognizes these two people? So, like, anybody my age, I would guess, knows who these two are, because we would settle in on a Saturday morning or afternoon to watch this kind of thing. I looked it up, and apparently the viewing numbers for these two people, so you've got Big Daddy and Giant Haystacks. Big Daddy always used to win, didn't he? You know, he was in the white, and Giant Haystacks was usually black or a dark color. And it was something like 18 million people used to tune in for this match. And people would be screaming at the TVs, you know, grannies and granddads and all sorts. And it was like a pantomime, wasn't it? I think so we're kind of very used to the idea of wrestling. We like that idea of, I think we need to get these guys off the screen. Yep. Just take it off a minute. Wrestling is... it might be an unusual passage to choose, but if you can turn to Genesis chapter 32, we'll have a look at the account. Keep putting my glasses on and off. And we'll... let me just give you a bit of context for the passage. Oh, by the way, does Paul, when he wrestles his children, maybe, I don't know if you wrestle your boys as well, or not so much. Sorry. Because there is a point, isn't there, when you don't want to do it anymore. I did it with our two boys. We withhold our full strength, don't we? I mean, I'm assuming Paul doesn't use his full strength. Oh, okay. All right, now imagine when the boys are really small, like three or four. Yeah, now his strength is withheld, right?
Yeah.
But it's still a good lesson for them, isn't it? And a good lesson for him, probably, to restrain as well. I think this is a little bit about, like, the way that God wrestles with us. I mean, this is an extraordinary passage that we're about to read. So let me try and explain a little bit about Jacob's life for those of you who don't know it. So this is, we're looking back about 3,800 years ago now. So it was about 1,800 years before Jesus that this incident took place. And Jacob was a twin. And he came out, you know, the very first question you ask a twin, oh, who came out first? Not really a fair one, isn't it? Is it? But I guess that's what Jacob always would have had to say, yeah, I'm the second, I'm the youngest. But we know from the Bible that he was struggling with his brother's called Esau, and that he was struggling with Esau in the womb. And they when they came out, Jacob was holding on to Esau's heel, even. And his name actually means heel catcher, or maybe a deceiver, or someone like that. Because when he was a bit older, probably in his teens or so, he asked his brother if he would sell his birthright. So this is the main portion of the inheritance and responsibility that was going to be passed down. And he sold him... His brother was so hungry for some red lentil stew. Remember the story? That his brother despised his birthright so much that he was happy to sell it for that stew. So Jacob got the birthright. Now, this is a bit different to the blessing, which happened later on in life. So this is, I used to think it was when Jacob was a young man that he went through this deceiving process, but he was actually in his 70s at this point when he decided not only did he have the birthright, but he also wanted his father's blessing. So this was going to be this significant passing on of a blessing that he had got from Abraham. So he deceived his brother with the help of his mother. Do you remember that? And he managed to get the blessing from his father. And Esau, as you can imagine, was pretty furious and decided that he wanted to, as soon as Isaac had died, he wanted to kill his brother. So Jacob fled with the help of his mother and went to his uncle Laban in a different land. So this is the background to it. And now he's getting into trouble with Laban, who's envious of him and the way his wealth and power has built up. He now has two wives and two servant wives and 11 children at this point, and he's forced to flee, and he's heading back to near where his brother is. How do you think he might have felt at this point? Nervous, to say the least. The last he knew was that his brother wanted to kill him. And here he is passing over so this is when the incident takes place. Is that enough of a backdrop? Good. So if we go to Genesis chapter 32, if you've got your Bibles, and we'll just start from verse 22. That night Jacob got up and took his two wives, his two maidservants, and his 11 sons and crossed the ford of the Jabbok. After he had sent them across the stream, he sent over all his possessions. So Jacob was left alone, and a man wrestled with him till daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip, so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. Then the man said, "Let me go, for it is daybreak." But Jacob replied, "I will not let you go unless you bless me." The man asked him, "What is your name?" "Jacob," he answered. Then the man said, "Your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome." Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" Then he blessed him there. So Jacob called the place Peniel, saying, "It is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared." The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. So, I mean, I think this is a bit of an extraordinary story anyway. I don't know if you've, excuse the pun, but I don't know if you've wrestled with this story before, this idea of God wrestling with Jacob. Let's just kind of go through it a little bit, piece by piece, just to see what actually happened, and then what we can learn from it as well. In addition to the physical wrestling, we often have to wrestle with, like you say, contend with certain issues, or perhaps disappointments in life. Or hurts, perhaps. I don't know if any of you come here with a certain amount of baggage and stuff and other things that you're wrestling with, which we need to give over to God. If we start at the beginning there, we know that Jacob has, in verse 24, he'd sent all his family and his possessions and his worldly wealth. Excuse me, he was a wealthy man at this point. He had lots of, probably two villages, it says two camps full or two villages full of people that belonged to him. And he left them, and he was the other side of the brook, and he was left alone. Sometimes I wonder how often we take time to be alone with God, to even allow ourselves to have an encounter with God, or to allow God to have an encounter with us. I read, I think it was in The Guardian earlier, a few weeks ago, that we now spend the average person in the UK spends 7.5 hours in front of a screen every single day. Now that could be that more than half of that is on a phone screen. The rest is on TV or a laptop or something. 7.5 hours. So if you're somebody kind of roughly my age, that would mean of the remainder of your, I'm 56, of the remainder of your life, you'd be spending about 8 hours of it in front of a screen. Sorry, 8 years of it in front of a screen. 8 years of the rest of your life. So if you're much younger, think how many years you might be. Sometimes we just don't have this alone time anymore, do we? I think if you get a little thing for the prayer station, which Lisa has kindly set up. If you're like me and you're not the sort of person to go to those prayer stations at some point during the weekend, even if it's just once, and just to go and sit there for a moment, I would have been quite disinterested in that kind of thing. And the first time I did it, I thought, wow, actually, doing something different like this, it was really quite encouraging and quite liberating. I think I had always had this view that prayer, or the idea of praying, is just you alone with God somewhere else and you don't need anything external. But those little prompts and little ideas are just wonderful little places to go. So if you're just to spend a bit of time with God. Some of them are Bible verses and some of them are questions to reflect on. I would encourage you to do it. So how often do we take time to even be alone with God? On to the next verse. And a man wrestled with him until daybreak. When the man saw that he could not overpower him, he touched the socket of Jacob's hip so that his hip was wrenched as he wrestled with the man. So we're now probably a few hours in. The background to what's going on is during the night. So at night he'd decided to be left alone, and this wrestle happens until daybreak. So it seems to be a little bit of a contradiction, because at first the man saw that he could not overpower him, and then he put his hip out of joint just with a mere touch. So it looks like they were pretty equal. And some people will say, well, actually, this wasn't a physical wrestle. I personally believe it was. It wasn't just a metaphor for something else. There are too many descriptions in this text. The idea of touching, the hip socket, the dislocation, the fact that Jacob kept holding on, and then the subsequent limp. To me, there are too many physical aspects for it to not be a physical occurrence. But of course, it's something that I haven't met anybody who feels that they have wrestled with God in a physical sense. But we can still learn from it to this day. I believe also that this man was God in human form. I'm aware that there are different views on this. Scholars call this something called a Christophany, which is where Jesus appeared, a pre-incarnate Jesus appeared, and I believe this is what happened. Whenever we see God on two legs, this is Jesus in his pre-incarnate form. So I believe that that Jacob was actually wrestling with Jesus himself. And here we get the first glimpse of a God who is okay to be wrestled with. I mean, isn't that amazing? Like, this is a God who ultimately was going to limit himself by sending Jesus. And if we think back to what we how we describe that wrestling, this closeness, this grappling, this idea of contending, God's okay with that. God's okay with that. Somebody asked me yesterday when I told them about my health issues, asked if I was cross with God. I hadn't actually felt cross with God. I felt sad, I felt disappointed, but it's God is okay with us being cross as well. He's all right with us grappling with these issues. For those of you who have read the Psalms, you will know that approximately 40% of them are laments. This is David pouring out his heart to God. It's okay that we are angry at times, that we are cross with whatever life has thrown at us. And this is an example of it here in physical form. Not only did he allow it, but he initiated it. A man came and wrestled with Jacob. So Jacob's got a lot going on now, hasn't he, in his mind. Who's this man? And I wonder at which point during the wrestle he realized that it was no ordinary man that he was wrestling with. Or at least he has an inkling at this point. Because he then says, I will not let you go. Remember, his hip is out of joint. I don't know if there's any doctors here, but I'm guessing hips are quite important, right? If you have no hip, you're probably going to fall over. I'd fancy myself in a fight with somebody who's dislocated their hip already. But it's at this point that Jacob doesn't let go. Jacob doesn't think, oh, I'm out of here then. Quite the opposite. He's saying, okay, well, I'm going to hold on. I'm not going to let you go unless you bless me. So he got to this point, and I think that God would have been pleased at that. The fact that there was this kind of wrestle, there was this kind of test, and yet Jacob still wanted to hold on to him. So then the man asked him, what is your name? And Jacob, he answered. So if it is God, he's likely to know Jacob's name already. He will know Jacob's name already. So why do you think that he asked Jacob his name? Because he's going to change it, yeah? Could be that. Oh, that's a good place. It was the meaning of his name. Okay, so you think perhaps he wanted him to challenge him about his nature or the meaning of his name. Absolutely, supplanter or deceiver or heel catcher, yeah? Any other thoughts? Oh, sorry. Yeah, there was much more of an identity with people's names. Yes, very similar. And you. Yes. Yeah, maybe that as well. Yeah, I'm here to. By the way, I'm here to learn as much as much as you are. Okay, so this was a reminder. Yeah, who's about to meet his brother. Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I think when we read scripture and we find that God is asking us a question, it's not because he doesn't know something. It's because he wants us to reflect and have a think about our character and what we're about. And do you remember the last time? We haven't read the rest of the passage, but if you turn to chapter... If we go back to the time when Jacob stole the blessing, if we go back to chapter 27 in Genesis, And I think verse 18. This is the last time that Jacob had been asked his name. So he had gone to, he'd put his brother's clothes on, he had put goat skin on his hands to make him, to make the father give him Esau's blessing. So verse 18 says, he went to his father and said, "My father." So he went for the blessing. "Yes, my son," he answered, "who is it?" And at this point, Jacob said to his father, "Not I am Jacob, but I am Esau, your firstborn. I have done as you told me. Please sit up and eat some of my game, so that you may give me your blessing." So the last time he was asked that question, he said he was somebody else. Remember, he was a man who wanted to be like his brother. He wanted his birthright. He wanted his blessing. It's almost like he was holding on to something that his brother had. We read elsewhere that Esau was seen as the strong hunter type, and that's what his father preferred. And I wonder if Jacob was always in his brother's shadow. So this is the point where he's now asked the same question, but by God, and he tells the truth. "I am Jacob." And it feels like this is the point where he is letting go of everything else that he had aspired, maybe what his name previously meant. He had acquired his wealth and his power and so on, and that he could have considered his blessing. And it was just the other side of the brook. But actually he, I think, realized that that's not where true blessing laid, in the things that he had accumulated. And he realized that this true blessing could only be found in the person he was now wrestling with. He didn't decide to leave and go back to his. He wanted to hold on. And I think you can only really hold on to something properly or someone if you've let go in the first place. It reminds me of a story in... Has anybody heard of Jungle Doctor's Fables? They're a little bit like Aesop's Fables, but written by a Christian, I believe a missionary. I can't remember his name now. Has anybody else heard of Jungle Doctor's Fables? No. You've heard of it as well. There is this. They're mostly animal tales, and they're there to illustrate truths. And the idea of catching a the way to catch a monkey, apparently, is to have some kind of heavy jar like that with either peanuts in or a banana, and a monkey will reach in, grab the peanuts or the banana or whatever it is, but will not be able to bring it out because it's too long or too wide, or his fist is now bigger than the neck of the jar. And the hunter will come and just pick the monkey up. And the monkey could, of course, just scamper away, but because it's holding on to whatever it is that it's holding on to, it won't do it. So this is a simple way of, just in case you're ever out in a jungle anywhere, then you know where how to catch a monkey. Bear Grylls, eat your heart out. So I think this is the point where Jacob has to let go of all of that. And he does that in order to hold on to God. So he's gone from being alone now on the side of the brook to somebody who is now being held. And we get Jacob then being asked another question. Jacob said, "Please tell me your name." But he replied, "Why do you ask my name?" And then he blessed him there. So this was another chance for Jacob to reflect. But this time, it is on God. A chance to reflect on, why did you ask my name? Maybe this is God saying, you know who I am. Perhaps you should realize, perhaps, at this point, or maybe you do realize at this point, So I think Jacob had, and this is why that I believe that it's Jesus, because Jacob said, called the place Peniel and said, it is because I saw God face to face, and yet my life was spared. So Jacob had a doubt as to who it was he had wrestled now. He knew that it was God. And I think this is our starting point now. Because having an encounter with God allows us to face in the right direction. It allows us to start this race. It allows us to, as Angela said yesterday, whatever sign we chose, whatever roadside sign we chose, that was our starting point. And I think encountering Jesus and seeing him fresh, face to face, is our starting point. Let me just finish the rest of the passage. The sun rose above him as he passed Peniel. So now we're at the end of the night and the start of the morning, and he was limping because of his hip. Therefore, to this day, the Israelites do not eat the tendon attached to the socket of the hip, because the socket of Jacob's hip was touched near the tendon. Quite literally, that's even the case today. That part of an animal is not kosher to eat. And this is nearly 4,000 years later. This was a historical event which Israelites looked to. Sorry, I missed the bit which was... the renaming. So verse 28, then the man said, your name will no longer be Jacob, but Israel, because you have struggled with God and with men and have overcome. So this is where Jacob gets his new name, isn't it? His new identity. So imagine did anybody know here that the word Israel or the name Israel means wrestling with God? Literally that? It's incredible, isn't it? Whenever I see the news now, isn't it amazing that Israel is in the news? Lots of days, especially late last 2 or 3 years. And if you substitute that in your mind for a country wrestling with God, it kind of puts a slightly different light on it, doesn't it? But there's not many countries that have lasted this many years. This was, like I say, about 1800 BC, the birth of the name Israel. And here we are 2,000 years after the birth of Jesus, and the name Israel still exists, the country still exists. I mean, I don't know when England was... lots of countries are quite modern, even within the last 100 years, aren't they? England was, what, 8th century, or I don't know, 10th century? Any historians here? I mean, there are a few ancient countries as well, aren't they? There, Syria and Egypt. But don't ask me all the detail of that. But Israel is one that has lasted for a long time, and Jews now will of course pinpoint this as the birth of their identity, of the name Israel, at least. I think it's pretty amazing anyway. There's a part of me that wants the blessing that Jacob wanted, but not the wrestle that goes with it. Sometimes I feel like the last 5 years or so for us, since the reason we left Ireland, I don't know if I mentioned this last night, was due to redundancy. Following COVID, the charity decided to sell the centre, and we had to come back. We had accommodation on site, so the closure of the centre meant we had to move as well. And I feel like we've had a kind of a 5-year-long wrestling match in some ways. God has blessed us many times during that as well, and we've managed to see much beauty in those 5 years. But it does sometimes feel like we've had a bit of a long wrestle. I actually have a real limp now as well, following my health thing as well, so I can identify a little bit with Jacob. But I think overall, I would rather have a limp and be blessed than have no limp and no blessing. I think this could be a good point just to break for a minute. And I mean, I do want to just fast forward to what happened the next day for Jacob. But I think before that, it might be worth just, let's just see what the time is over there. Is it 25? This could be a time to, I'm not sure if it's best in groups, but I wondered whether it would be worth spending just a few minutes thinking about the things that we might be holding on to, which we need to let go of. And I don't know whether this is best as an individual thing. If you have pen and paper, I think it might be, rather than in groups. So maybe we'll just take 5 minutes. So, sorry if this, I keep dropping this, don't I? So just have, and this isn't anything that you would need to share with anybody or read out or something. I think it's just might be good to have that little bit of time just to write down what it is that you're holding on to that might stop you from holding on to God, that might something that you're wrestling with, perhaps I don't know what they could, whether it's hurts or disappointments or relationships or things that you know are getting in the way of your relationship with God. Have you all got pen and paper, or do I need to find some? I would just, if you just take 5 minutes doing that. Okay, I don't know how you got on with that, but hopefully you thought of at least one or two things it might need to let go of in order to hold on to God. If we do fast forward to what happened then, the following day, it's nothing short of remarkable. Jacob had been told by his servants who he'd sent on ahead that Esau was coming with an army of 400 men, like a mini militia. I should have mentioned that as part of the context. That was before he went into the wrestle. He knew that. And here we are the following day, and Jacob is probably, or at least had been trembling in his boots. I wonder if he now just felt a little bit more assurance that God was with him. So if we go to chapter 33 and verse 1, Jacob looked up, and there was Esau coming with his 400 men. So he divided the children among Leah, Rachel, and the two maidservants. He put the maidservants and their children in front, Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph in the rear. He himself went on ahead, and he bowed down to the ground 7 times as he approached his brother. But Esau ran to meet Jacob and embraced him. Isn't that incredible? He embraced him. After all, this is about 20 years later, by the way. Jacob is in his 90s at this. Jacob and Esau are in their 90s at this point. Okay? So you can imagine the... there was a little road sign with the two little old people. Imagine that. That one might sum up this little... so they hadn't seen each other for 20 years, and he embraced him. He threw his arms around his neck and kissed him, and they wept. Remember, this is his twin brother, and somebody here that he probably wasn't separated from for quite a few years until later on. Then Esau looked up and saw the women and children. "Who are these with you?" he asked. Jacob answered, "They are the children God has graciously given your servant." Then the maidservants and their children approached and bowed down. Next, Leah and her children came and bowed down. Last of all came Joseph and Rachel, and they too bowed down. Esau asked, "What do you mean by all these droves I met? To find favor in your eyes, my lord," he said. But Esau said, "I already have plenty, my brother. Keep what you have for yourself." This is like a little twin argument now. But Jacob said, "No, please, if I have found favor in your eyes, accept this gift from me. For to see your face is like seeing the face of God." Isn't that amazing? He now sees his brother as he in the same way as seeing the face of God. "Please accept the present that was brought to you, for God has been gracious to me, and I have all I need." And because Jacob insisted, Esau accepted it. I think the King James Version in that verse says, not that I have everything I need, but now I have everything. So it's like he's realized that the blessing that he was the wealth and the power and the amount of people and animals, it wasn't everything. But having seen the face of God, he could now say, "I have everything," and insist that Esau accepted the gift. So Jacob bowed down before his brother. It was almost as if he was saying, "I was wrong in taking that blessing. I don't need it anymore." In a sense, he was giving it back to his brother because he had realized where true blessing lay. He had encountered God, and of course he had the new name as well. Whenever, I don't know how you are, whether you're a fan of the Old Testament or not. I know some people just don't like it at all or struggle with it a lot. I was always encouraged to, when reading the Old Testament, see it as a story within a story within a story. Can you imagine if God had not given us a Bible full of stories? Imagine he had given us a process document or a creed, a list of rules or something. Would you prefer that as a message from God, like a systematic theology, if you like? Well, this is what the Trinity is. Isn't it great that we've actually got this book of stories that we can learn from? I don't know about you, but sometimes find things in there that we can read the same story many times and see something new. So, you know, like Russian dolls, where you take the top off and then there's more Russian dolls underneath and then they're smaller and smaller. That's the way I think of when I think of these stories. So we have Jacob's wrestle with God is one story within a story of God's dealings with a nation. This is the birth of the origin of the word Israel. And of course, it builds on the blessings that he'd given to Abraham and Isaac. But then, of course, we're in this position of being able to look back 2,000 years, aren't we? To Jesus. Jacob may have had the faith to see what the future might have looked like. So the bigger story is, I like it when people split up the word history. The whole of history is his story. And we can see our vantage point is being able to look back to Jesus as well. Because this, I don't know about you, but this story reminds me very much of what was to happen 1,800 years later in the Garden of Gethsemane. Because, I'll read this bit, it's a bit easier. Because one night, there was a man who was also going to cross a brook in a valley, except this one was Kidron. He would be alone as well with God. And he was about to face a contingent of soldiers the next morning. And he became troubled and distressed. He was in anguish. And he wrestled in prayer with his father. you might remember the words, Father, please take this cup of suffering, yet not my will be done, but your will be done. So Jesus had done no wrong, and they wanted to kill him. That's where it's different. Jesus had done no wrong. And as morning appeared, Judas also appeared and embraced him, gave him a kiss. And he was also asked his name. He said, who are you? And he said, I am Jesus. And he was going to die for them as well. For me, the similarities are stark. He would have, he would obtain the blessing for us, the same blessing that Jacob wanted as well. And Jesus would have not the limp, but the scars to show for it as well. Because he was, of course, as Philippians tells us, it was a man who, being in the very nature God, I think I'll put this verse up. Being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. What time have we got? 10 to 11. I think there's a lot in that passage, isn't there, that we can learn from. Remember the story within the story within the story. We can see where true blessing lies, and because of that, we can face in the right direction. We can face forward. We can face Jesus. We've still got 10 minutes or so, haven't we? Do they serve tea at 11 or? Yeah. Maybe just for the very last 5 minutes, in very small groups, see if you can answer these two questions between you and your group. What do you find encouraging about what we've looked at this morning? And what do you find difficult about what we've looked at this morning? Is that okay, or is that pushing it for time? Okay. All right, so just those two questions. If you get back, you know, roughly just around your tables, 3 or 4 or 5, whichever, and those two questions. So what do you find encouraging about this text? What do you find difficult? And then we'll wrap up very quickly before a cup of tea. Okay. No doubt you'll want some tea and coffee soon. Would anybody like to share anything from their group? Anything first the encouragements, things that you might find encouraging?
The story was brilliant, but just the little comment that you made about how actually the Bible is in story form. We all know that we learn best from stories, don't we? And what a blessing of God to give us things where we can have stories that we can relate to. And he knows what we need, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no. Okay, anybody else got something?
I think the Hebrew word for faith is panim.
Okay.
So Peniel, when he says he saw his face.
Yeah.
And also I thought with the story, there's always a lot of pain with families.
Right.
You know, it seems to be, you know, something that's
This was supposed to be the encouraging bits.
This was so good.
We'll come on to the difficult bits in a minute. But yeah, I think you're right. Yeah.
I've never thought of Jesus in Gethsemane and this story together. Okay. It was like, oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else?
There's a purpose in the wrestling.
There's a purpose in the wrestling. In and through the wrestling. Yeah, absolutely. There is something that God wanted to bring about with the change of name and the chance to reflect. Yeah. That's a lovely, lovely summary.
Actually, going in with the story idea, and I often think when people are in difficult times, and this would have been something Jacob would have, maybe he thought, but when we're in it, we're in time, like as it goes through, like God knew what was going to happen, but Jacob was in the middle. And when things are hard, like when you see there's purpose in the wrestling, I think sometimes it's helpful for us to remember that we're still in the middle of the chapter. Like the story has more to come. Yeah. And when we're in the middle of the chapter, that's when we have to hold on to the fact that God has things for us and it's not the end, you know? Like, I know we know that, but it's all about the story and we haven't turned over the page. And when it's hard in the wrestle, that's when we need to remember this isn't the end. This is what I go through in order to come through to the blessing.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. One more, Jane, over there.
I was just saying that sometimes one's wrestling to let go of things that actually aren't from yourself, but from what our parents have said of us, either encouraging things and we don't feel as though we've lived up to the potential that they expected of us, or discouraging things where we were never told that we were loved or whatever. And, you know, there's a lot of healing in that wrestling.
Yeah, absolutely. I wonder if Jacob felt a bit like that with the father loving Esau because of his love of game, and he was the man of the field, wasn't he? Whereas Jacob was the indoors man. Yeah. You may have felt that. And so the other question was, what do you find difficult in this passage? So we've had one already, that there is often pain with families. Yeah. He was left with a limp.
Left with a limp for the rest of his life.
Yeah. It's a tough read, isn't it, as well? Yeah. And he went on to live till, I think he was about 140 when he died. So this is a limp for about 45 years or so that he would have had. Actually, Jacob is one of those characters in the Bible where we have a little record of him right from in the womb, in Rebecca's womb, struggling. But also in Hebrews, he's in the Hall of Faith chapter, which is fabulous, where he leans on his staff and looks forward to seeing God again. Isn't that amazing? Any other things that you found difficult?
I just wondered about, you know, when Jacob showed all his family and his possessions and everything, was he actually offering those to Esau? Was he prepared to give them all to Esau?
I don't know about all of them, but he was certainly prepared to give lots.
Because I know when Jesus died on the cross, he gave all.
Yeah, yeah.
And I wondered if that's whether Jacob came to that place where he was prepared to give it all for reconciliation.
Yeah, I think I did count, but I can't remember the number of times. The number of times he bowed down to his brother and also called him Lord. Mm. I think certainly he'd come to that point where he realized they didn't mean anything to him anymore, relative to having met Jesus or seen the face of God. Yeah. So I think he would have been prepared to give it all up for that relationship with his brother, and giving the blessing back. Yeah. They did in the end. Yeah, yeah.
So he has that gift.
No, that. Yeah, I don't think we can go that far to speculate on Edom's personal relationship, but I think he was also blessed. Esau and the Edomites were also blessed by God. So I would guess he was reconciled with God, or, yeah. But yeah, certainly at that point, Jacob decided to take a different path after the reconciliation with his brother. Yeah. I think that's a good point to break. It's coming up to 10 past 11, so if we meet in half an hour for a tea and coffee and then come back about 25 to or 22?
25 to, I think I'd make it half past 5.
Okay, so back at 25 to, that would be great. Thank you for listening.